evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Lauren Meltzer. Our topic tonight is looking for love online, the internet as the modern matchmaker. According to a new Stanford University study, the internet is now the third most common way for Americans to find romantic partners. And the study's authors posit that if current trends continue, the web will eventually become our nation's number one matchmaker, eclipsing friends, family, church, and neighborhood. What are the social implications of the web's increasingly dominant role in our romantic lives? Are relationships formed online more likely to transcend racial, religious, age, or class differences? Do couples who meet online have more satisfying or longer-lasting relationships? Are those less technically savvy less likely to pair up? And in case you feel, on this Valentine's Day, emboldened to join the throngs looking for love online, we will also delve into the art and science of virtual mate-seeking. What kinds of information should you disclose in your profile? What are Bay Area residents looking for in their mates? And how do compatibility questionnaires work? Joining me to discuss these issues and more are in studio Professor Michael Rosenfeld, Associate Professor of Sociology at Stanford University, and the author most recently of Meeting Online, The Rise of the Internet as a Social Intermediary. Welcome, Professor.
Thanks for having me. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. And by phone, we have Sam Yagan, co-founder and chief executive officer of OkCupid, a national online dating site. Welcome, Sam.
Happy Valentine's Day to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
And, of course, we'll be taking calls from you. What have been your online dating experiences, from the harrowing to the happily ever after? Or what have you heard? Give us a call at 415-841-4134 or by email at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Well, I'd like to start with you, Michael Rosenfeld, Associate Professor of Sociology at Stanford University. You recently completed a study on the ways that the internet is changing how romantic relationships are formed. Can you summarize some of your chief findings?
Yeah. One of the things we have to talk about, I think, is what predates the internet. Before we had the internet, what did we have? Well, we had some older technology like family. Family is sort of technology that's been around for a long time. Friends, sort of old-fashioned technology. If you go back far enough, sort of before 1940, the main way that Americans met their partners was through family and in primary and secondary school. Over the course of the second half of the 20th century, family became less influential because people were marrying later and they were sort of moving away from home before they settled down. And so if you were, you know, in 1950, people were marrying when they were 19 years old, so you were going to marry somebody that was from the neighborhood. Probably your parents already knew their parents. Maybe you had gone to high school with them. Who else could you marry when you're 19, really? But now people are marrying much later, and so they generally find themselves in a context where their parents aren't around, and they know the people that they know their parents don't know. So parents' influence has been declining steadily for 70 years. For most of the 20th century, friends was the main way Americans met their partners. You know, your friend would introduce you to somebody, or you'd go over to their house and there would be somebody, or they would say, hey, you know, I know somebody who you would really like. And that was, you know, friends were sort of key. So the rule for Valentine's Day, number one, is be good to your friends. But in the past 15 years, we've had this tremendous rise of the internet, and the internet has sort of displaced everything else to a certain extent. So it's displaced. Family's been in decline for 70 years, but the internet is also displacing friends, neighborhood. Secondary and primary school have been in decline for a long time, but the internet is really rising in importance. So everything else is starting to take backseat.
And when you say internet, do you mean online dating sites, or do you mean the internet?
Internet broadly, because some people meet through online dating sites, which is sort of more intentional behavior, but other people meet playing checkers on Yahoo or at World of Warcraft or in Second Life. There's sort of all sorts of anything that you can do online. Lots of online sites have chat or email or ways for you to contact other people. So people meet through church group websites and other things. So there's all sorts of things. And obviously, you know, a lot of what we know about dating comes from the matchmaking sites like OkCupid. But then there's also this, all of this other sort of behavior. You know, Craigslist is big too. People, you know, it's sort of quick and dirty. You post a three-sentence thing on Craigslist and see who hits you up.
And so, you know, you gave an incredible stat in your paper. You said that the internet may eventually become the number one way people meet. So what makes you think that online dating or, you know, finding people over the internet will rise at this rate?
Well, the prevalence of internet access has been going up a lot. So that's the first thing. There's still a quarter of the United States that doesn't really have internet access at home. So that's going to decline over time. So more as more people get access to it. The second thing is a lot of the people in the United States who need partners and don't have them, like older women, part of the reason they don't have them is because they don't have internet skills. They don't have internet access at home. They don't really get the web. They're a little bit afraid of it. So as newer generations come into those life stages, we'll find that today's 20-year-olds, 30 years from now, they'll be a little more web savvy than grandma is right now.
In your paper, you mentioned that 17% of people on Match.com, 18.5, end up getting married. Is that what I, did I read that statistic correctly or no?
In my paper, I talk about what percentage of Americans who've met in the past couple of years met online.
Okay.
So for hetero couples, you know, men and women, it's about 22%. And for same-sex couples, it's about 61%.
Okay, okay, oh, interesting. But in terms of actual, when they if they tie the knot, do we have statistics on that?
Sam may have statistics from his site.
Okay. That. All right. Well, let me bring Sam in. Sam, you're the CEO of OkCupid. Can you describe for listeners, I mean, I'm assuming most people know the online experience, but for those who don't, can you describe how an online dating site like OkCupid works?
Sure. The model stems loosely from the personals ads that used to be a staple part of every newspaper, every local newspaper. So the online dating model is, again, from a technology perspective, is new, but people have been posting ads, personals ads, for decades prior to the advent of online dating in the mid-90s. It's really the typical online dating experience is a series of photos that you would upload, a written profile that's usually about 200 to 500 words, and then depending on the site that you're on, a variety of algorithms that are going to usually attempt to predict compatibility and help you sort of weed through the hundreds of thousands or millions of other profiles on the site to find those people that are going to be most compatible with you. That's the basic structure of pretty much every online dating site that's out there today.
And so how, I mean, the algorithm part, of course, is the most interesting. So how does that work? How do you develop an algorithm that actually matches people?
And here's where there is a variety of different approaches to this problem, as you might imagine. Some sites are very much come at the problem very much as psychologists. They come having profiled tens of thousands of successful couples, analyzing what were the psychological profiles of the couples that were successful, what were the profiles of those that were not successful, and then attempting to basically create a formula based on the previous successful couples to predict the future, predict successful couples going forward. Other models like ours don't really believe, we don't really believe that there's one formula that can be applied to everyone that's out there. So our system is much more about coming up with a way for our members to customize our algorithm to themselves. So we have a very decentralized model. And then there's everything in between. And that's why most people you'll find who online date is a little bit interesting will use multiple sites. And you might think, why would you need to do that? But it turns out that not only are there different people on different sites, but even if the same people are on two different sites, the algorithms that the sites use may not surface the same people to you even though you're both on the same site. So that's why you see a lot of people using multiple sites.
And does each site have its own kind of personality? Like, do you think, oh, I won't go on that site because only the nerds are there or the popular people are over here?
Absolutely. I always think of online dating as, whenever someone asks me a question about online dating, I think about bars. You know, because that's kind of, at the end of the day, if you just kind of think, how did people meet before? You know, you go to the neighborhood bar and, you know, you have the bartender, you have the atmosphere, you have the other people you expect to be there. And just as each bar develops its own personality over time, online dating sites do the same. You have something like JDate, which is obviously ubiquitous in the Jewish population. But then you have Jews who don't want to be on JDate because they don't want to just be looking for other Jews. And you'll have sites that have, you know, like I said, become very much about a psychological approach. We're kind of the geeky site, you know, which is why I think we're so popular in the Bay Area with all the technologists. We're kind of a site founded by a bunch of math nerds who thought that math, you know, was the real key to unleashing successful relationships. So absolutely, there's a whole spectrum of sites. And but yeah, there's something for everyone out there for sure.
So to what extent can romantic chemistry actually be quantified or boiled down to one's answers? I mean, is there such a thing?
We definitely think that it all depends, I think, what the site is trying to promise its members. And this is another place where sites differentiate themselves. You have some sites that promise you a soulmate, and that is a bold statement, I think. And while true occasionally, I think often ends up with people being disappointed when they don't find a soulmate. My motto, the kind of the way I think about building OkCupid, is our job is no bad first dates. That's a far cry from a soulmate, right? I think if I can sort of go through, if I can weed out the bad first dates, and you go on, you know, half a dozen first dates over the course of your first month as a member, and maybe four of them are, fine, one of them is, pretty good, and one of them is really good, that to me is a great month for you in an online dating site. You've met six new people, none of them were terrible. And so I think from that perspective, if you think about my goal as an online dating site provider to take the millions of profiles I have and to really get you to go on just those handful of dates that aren't disasters, then I think, algorithms, math, questionnaires can go a long way toward making sure that those core incompatibilities are removed. But ultimately, I believe that, you know, true love, you know, falling in love and finding someone, there's so many intangibles, so much chemistry involved, both probably literally and figuratively, that I don't think, you know, just a series of questions or any algorithm can really just say, well, you've taken this quiz, this is your soulmate. I don't think that's realistic.
Okay. Michael, do you want to add to this?
Yeah, one of the things that Sam said was that the internet is, you know, internet dating sites are kind of like what the newspaper personals used to be. And of course, one of the big differences is that if you put an ad in the newspaper personals, somebody would have to pick up that edition of the newspaper to see your ad. And a week later, when the new edition came out, or the day later, it was already gone and forgotten. It wasn't going to be easy to retrieve it. And so part of what the internet provides that's so magical is search. And the power of search is even more important if you're looking for something that's hard to find. So I think one of the reasons why same-sex couples are more likely to meet online than heterosexual couples are is that same-sex couples are necessarily looking for something that's harder to find. You know, only about 2% of all couples in the United States are same-sex couples. And so if you're looking for a partner who wants that, you're always looking for something that's harder to find, even in the Bay Area. So the other thing that I found in my study that was kind of interesting is that I had sort of expected young people to be the ones who would be most likely to date online, because those are the kids in my classes who I can't get them to put the laptop down. And they're, even if you get them to put the laptop down, they're Facebooking on their cell phone, and it, you know, they just can't let it go. But the truth is they don't date much online because they're surrounded by single young people. So it's really the middle-aged heterosexual folks, the people in their 30s and 40s, who are most likely to have met their partners online, because they're the ones who face a thin dating market. That is, if you're 40 years old and single, most of your friends are partnered, and all of a sudden, you're wondering, how am I going to meet somebody? And that's where the power of search is so important.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Sam, do you find when you see the people that come to OkCupid, or I think OkCupid tends to skew a little young, but you know your competitors, that what you're seeing is pretty similar to what Michael's describing?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think what we've seen is wherever the harder it is for you to find the person that you are likely to be attracted to in your day-to-day environment. So, you know, he talked about a thin market. The less liquidity there is in your market, the fewer people there are that are what you're looking for, the more an online marketplace makes a lot of sense. And if you think about it, the more fringe your community is, the more out of the mainstream you are, the more you turn, or you're at least going to be one of the first people to turn online, if for no other reason than, you know, it's so easy to search within a 15, 20, 30, 50-mile radius, and imagine trying to get to a bar 50 miles away on the off chance of meeting someone that you might be interested in. That's a tough proposition. But if you just sitting at home in your pajamas can sit there and, you know, check out everyone in the Bay Area, that's just so convenient.
Do people that have been married before and now are divorced, are they more likely or less likely, or about the same, to now approach these online dating sites? I guess, Michael.
Well, I mean, I think divorced people tend to be middle-aged people. So in my study, I find that those are the people among the heterosexuals who are most likely to have met most recent partner online. For the gays and lesbians, there isn't really an age effect for them because they're always facing a thin market at every age. So it's a little different situation for them.
I also think that this will, and I'd be interested to hear your perspective on this. I think I expect one effect of online dating, and which is again essentially creating more liquidity in the dating marketplace. I expect what you'll see over the course of time is people more willing to leave relationships that are not going well, more willing to divorce. I think one reason people stay in unhappy marriages is this sort of fear of going back into the dating market. And someone who is in their early 50s, you know, might think, well, am I really going to go down to the bar to pick up, you know, a potential mate? And now just seeing that at the click of a button you have literally hundreds of thousands of people that you can start to interact with, I think that's going to start to change the dynamics of married relationships.
Well, that's a really interesting point, Sam, and I see kind of two sides to that. Let me come back to that. Okay. If you're just joining us, this is City Visions. Tonight we're discussing the art, science, and social implications behind online dating. Joining me are Michael Rosenfeld, Associate Professor of Sociology at Stanford University and the author most recently of Meeting Online, The Rise of the Internet as a Social Intermediary, and Sam Yagan, co-founder and CEO of OkCupid, a national online dating site. If you'd like to join us, here's the number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or join us by emailing us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Again, if you have stories about dating online, we'd love to hear them. If you have questions about, you know, how to approach it or why you think you should stay away, give us a call. Again, the number is 415-841-4134, 841-4134, or emailing us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. I want to go to my first caller tonight. We have Chandler from Berkeley. Hi, Chandler.
Hi. I've used a lot of the sites, and I don't have a whole lot of trouble getting a good first date, but I'm in my early 50s, and I don't seem to do well in finding a long-term relationship, you know, more than like 6 months or so. So I'm wondering if, I've used sites that kind of direct who you get, and I've used sites where it's just totally open. Okay. So I'm wondering what they might have to say about those things.
Okay. Good question. Sam, do you want to take this one?
You know, I think it's obviously a case by case in each individual person's experience with online dating. I tend to be of the school of thought that says once the first in-person meeting happens, then and a relationship that starts online and a relationship that starts through friends or family ends up being that relationship arc that the two people take, I think is largely the same.
Yeah.
And really not dependent on whether you were set up by a friend, a family, or an online dating site. Once the two people get together, you very quickly forget. It doesn't really impact you how you got to that first date. And I'd be interested to hear the professor's...
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it's... Some people find that kind of surprising because the theory has sometimes been in the past that relationships have more longevity if the relationship is sort of embedded in your social network. So your friends know them and your parents know their parents, and it's harder to break up with somebody like that. But in my data, actually, I found pretty much what Sam was saying, that how you meet doesn't really have an effect on self-reported relationship quality, and it doesn't seem to have an effect on relationship longevity. I've been following people for 1 year. I've got a few more years to go to really complete the study, but so far there isn't any difference between people who met online and people who met through friends or family in terms of how likely they are to break up.
And Chandler, do you feel like your expectations of are higher when you meet someone online than if you were introduced by a friend?
No, I would agree with what they're saying, that it's sort of the same, but it's certainly easier to find someone that I seem interested in or I am interested in.
When you're
but
online.
I seem to pick the wrong people ultimately.
Well, good luck on Valentine's Day. Good luck, and thank you so much for being a part of this conversation.
True love is hard to find also. I think that's a sort of universal fact.
I want to go back and talk a little bit about what we were talking about, Sam. You know, you mentioned that, you know, people might be less likely to stay in a relationship knowing that there's so many people out there. Do you think that this is almost, that this kind of is one of the positive or negative implications? Because it feels like in a way that people might give up on something as opposed to working harder, as opposed to, you know, thinking that they're more fish in the sea, if you will, but just because there's a lot of pretty faces out there, when the truth of the matter is that, you know, it's a relationship's a relationship, and, you know, that it's hard work. I'd love to hear from both of you. Sam?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, this gets down to sort of the fundamental questions of what is the role of, and here I'm going to just assume heterosexual marriage, and obviously I that's not the only kind of
well relationship. even with dating, you know, if you're dating someone.
Sure. I think in a dating context, I think it's a little bit easier because I think you don't get the stickiness of you know what does the institution of marriage mean in society or in religion. I think in the case of dating it's a little bit simpler, because you know, that's kind of a question that people have always had is, you know, hey, I'm dating this person, you know, should I continue dating this person or not? And in this case, I think the real question is just, you know, how happy am I? And as long as people, you know, feel happy, and honestly, from a psychological perspective, if you feel the need to be looking around, at other alternatives, there's probably an underlying reason for that. And so to the extent that it sort of saves you from making a long-term commitment that you later regret, it's probably a good thing that those issues come out, you know, earlier in the relationship rather than later.
Okay, and Professor?
If it was true, and I think it may be true, if it was true that the Internet led to more efficiency in the dating market, we would expect to find more Americans having partners. That would be a sign that this new efficiency was clearing the market better, that people who previously couldn't find partners were now finding partners. We don't actually see evidence of that. I mean, I've tried to find evidence of that because it's consistent with my other findings. But as far as I can tell from the other data sources I've looked at, the partnership rate of Americans is pretty flat over the past 15 years. So it would be nice if the Internet brought love to people who haven't found it before. So that would be one thing. The second thing I think that I find when I'm talking to people is the stigma about internet dating is wearing off. So there, not that long ago, there was a stigma about this, and people who met online would have a sort of secondary story. Sometimes I interview people who would say that, you know, we met online, but I I tell people we met in a bar, you know, which reflects a kind of 5 years ago thinking about, you know, the internet is sleazier than a bar. But I think that that perception has melted away pretty much.
And you mentioned the word efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So do people assume when they're dating online or looking for love online that the whole process is going to be more efficient, or that they're going to be able to just find more people more quickly?
I think efficiency is a big part of it, right? Because you can communicate with people before without going out to meet them. So you can put up a profile and you can get 100 replies to that profile, and you can email or text or whatever to those 100 people and sort of sift through them before you decide on who are the 5 people that you're actually going to spend FaceTime with. So it's efficiency, and it's also efficiency in the sense that if you're looking for something that's hard to find, if you want a partner who has to speak Hindi or loves mountain climbing or you know, is an Orthodox Jew or something else, it helps to have a big pool of people to select from. And that's also the way, for instance, you know, the internet has revolutionized the market for parts for machines that are out of date. You know, if you have a 1962 camera, you can find a lens for it online, whereas before the internet, you were pretty much out of luck.
Okay. Well, this is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Lauren Meltzer. We're discussing the art, science, and social implications behind online dating this evening. And my guests are Michael Rosenfeld, Associate Professor of Sociology at Stanford University and the author of Meeting Online, The Rise of the Internet as a Social Intermediary, and Sam Yagan, co-founder and CEO of OkCupid, a national online dating site. You can join us by calling 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134, or emailing us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. We've got several people on the line right now, and I want to get to everyone. Let's go to Jenny from Alameda. Good evening, Jenny.
Good evening. My complaint is people always lied about something essential. So a guy would sound great, his pictures would look great, I'd meet him, and it would turn out, oh, that was a picture from 5 years ago before you gained another 100 pounds or something, you know?
Did you find this consistently, or were you able to ever weed out those that are lying?
No, there was always some really essential lie, so I just gave up, and I haven't touched it in years.
Sam, how do you deal with that? That seems like that is a common complaint people I know that are, you know, using online dating.
So we did an interesting study. We looked at men in this case. We plotted, it's a trivial analysis, we plotted the claimed heights of every user on our site, and you get a nice little bell curve. And then we compared that to the Census Bureau height of all the Americans in the U.S. And indeed, it turned out that men on OkCupid are exactly 2 inches taller than average humans in the United States. So you could either say we naturally select for tall people, or that people lie about their height. And I, you know, first began to feel a little bit bad about that, and I said, well, you know, that's no good that all the guys on OkCupid claim to be 2 inches taller than they really are. And then I got out my driver's license, and I looked at my driver's license, and I claim to be 5'11 on my driver's license, and I'm not. I'm 5'10. And then I thought about the number of times that I've been out at a bar and, you know, in the process of talking to someone that I meet there, you know, are there things that I exaggerated, or are there things that I, you know, slightly little white lies that I told here and there? I think in the process, I think just people lie about different things online that they would in a bar. In a bar, you can't lie about your height. You're right there. You're talking to someone. But you might overstate your job title. You might overstate, you know, how new your car is that you're driving, or whatever the case may be. And so there's always, in the course of marketing yourself to someone that you're trying to impress, I think there's always going to be a little bit of some liberties taken in how you go about doing that. The fact of the matter is that online you have different knobs to turn and levers to pull. You can use a slightly older picture. You can just state what your height is, and there's no way to confirm that until you get together. So I don't think it's that people online systematically lie more. I think it's just people lie about different things, and things you used to expect to be truth, you're shocked the first time you see them different from the way they're purported to be.
Do people, though, I don't know if you have any statistics on this, but are people likely to get second dates with someone that they see, you know, when they see them, they realize they did lie? Because that seems like, you know, trust is kind of at the core of any good relationship.
I think that's a great point. It's not. I think people who are new to online dating tend to lie more than people who are more long-term users. People who have been online dating for a while know that if you misrepresent yourself, you end up wasting your own time. Imagine you claim to be one person, and the person that comes to meet you is looking for that person, and you're someone totally different. That's unlikely to be a very good first date. So I think as you sort of go through a few of those bad first dates, like, well, why am I wasting my time pretending to be this other person? I might as well just be the person I really am, and maybe I have fewer first dates, but those first dates end up being more productive. So I think it's when you first start, you want to be the perfect online dater. You want your profile to be perfect, and we've seen a lot of our members just kind of scrap that profile and then just come back with a much more authentic profile that actually ends up working a lot better.
Yeah, there's been some research. I mean, I follow the blog at OkCupid because I'm a data guy myself. But there's been other research that tends to show that people's online profiles lie basically to the extent that people generally lie, which is to say, if you exaggerate your height by 1 inch, the truth is nobody really can tell. They're not, you know, at the bar after a beer or two and you're wearing shoes, they're not going to get the tape measure out and make you take your shoes off and put you up against the wall. If you say you're 5'11", it's pretty much good enough. So I think we have a tendency to shade the truth a little bit, but I think it's also true that people who use the dating sites whose intention is to actually meet you, which is not everybody, but those who are intending to meet you don't really have an interest in telling whoppers. And so that would discredit them on first meeting. And then everybody else is sort of in the same position that we've always been in, which is we may not even tell ourselves the truth about how much we weigh or how good we are.
You know, one question I have is, with when you meet someone that you at a bar, basically all you have to go by at first is really their appearance. Whereas with online dating, you get the whole, well, not the whole picture, but you get a lot of information. So is there any statistics, Sam, I'll first ask you, and then Michael, if you could follow up, that show that people choose partners or, you know, based on different criteria when they're looking online, like maybe more well-rounded criteria, if you will, than they would in a bar situation?
Yeah, we haven't asked that specific comparison, mostly because we haven't done the research on the offline piece, but we've got some proxies for that. And my favorite is that especially men, I think what we find is that men online are still very drawn and very, the female's picture. And again, I'm just going to assume heterosexuality just to simplify. The man is still very much influenced by the woman's photo. And that's by far, just like in a bar, it's that physical aesthetic attraction. That's by far the dominant criteria of whether a guy's going to send a message to a girl. Women, on the other hand, and this is to actually answer your question, women send a lot of messages to men that they have just ranked as unattractive. So we ask users to tell us how attractive they think each user is that they visit. And it turns out that women have this systematic tendency to rate a man as being a 2 out of 5, read his profile, find something redeeming about it or endearing about it, and then go ahead and send that message to the guy that they just told us was not that good looking. So I think that's something where in a bar, you know, a below average looking guy is going to have a hard time even getting the attention of that woman to even show that they're funny or smart or witty or whatever the case may be. Online, you have this 200 to 500 word profile, and if you can just get the woman to start scrolling down and reading, then all of a sudden you have this chance to influence her that you never would have gotten at a bar.
So do we? And then that said, I mean, are people more willing to take chances with people of ages or race that they haven't considered? Professor Michael?
The age disparity isn't that much different for people who meet online compared to people who meet in other ways. The interraciality, the chance of having a partner of a different race, isn't much different either. The real factor that influences interraciality is if you meet partner through your family, you're much more likely to meet somebody of the same race. Family is always keen on same race partners. You're more likely, if you meet online, to meet someone of a different religion, which I think is partly a measure of how there's some religious homogeneity in the other social networks of our lives, your friends, your family, your neighborhood, your church, for instance. So we get more relationship diversity online, and there's certainly more same-sex partnerships, I think, than we would find if we didn't have the internet.
And what about in terms of education and class?
In my research, I actually find that class is not that much of a barrier to relationships in the United States. So there isn't really anything that affects class very much.
Is that true offline, online?
Offline, online, whether you meet through family, there's a fair amount of class diversity in our social networks, in our neighborhoods, in our churches, in our schools. So I haven't found that. I mean, there's a preference for people to marry others of roughly the same educational and parental educational background. There's a preference, but it's not that strong a preference, and it doesn't seem to guide people more or less online.
And is that, and yet in relationships, I always was told that background, having similar backgrounds, is very important. Is that advice from yesteryear?
A lot of the stuff that your mom told you might not be true.
Okay, interesting. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is City Visions. Tonight we're discussing the art, science, and social implications behind online dating. Joining me are Michael Rosenfeld, Associate Professor of Sociology at Stanford University, and the author most recently of Meeting Online, The Rise of the Internet as a Social Intermediary, and Sam Yagan, co-founder and CEO of OkCupid, a national online dating site. If you'd like to join us, the number is 415-841-4134. Or you can join us by emailing us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Again, the number is 415-841-4134, or email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. We'd love to hear your experience, your story, your neighbor's story. All's good. And I'd like to go to a caller right now. We have Sarah, who's from Alameda. Good evening, Sarah.
Hi. I wanted to say that maybe 6 years ago, I first tried going online after my marriage fell apart, and when I sort of went through stages of using it, like using it for a time and then backing off for a while. And like the first time I used it, it was really important for me to be able to like reject people or say, you know, that's not for me. And I think I built a sort of strength. And not taking anything that came along, but being really strong, because maybe in my marriage the person left me, and then I didn't have very much success at that point. But I think that was the success, was being able to sort of read about people. And then the second period of time I used it, I said I need to get out. I want to meet people. I want to feel like a woman. You know, I want to get excited or maybe buy something new and have that flirtation on the text message and things like that. And I had so much fun. I really, really liked it. The dates were mostly terrible. and for some of the reasons that other people liked, the guy said he was 5'10 and he was 5'6 and he was 40, but he was really 50, things like that. It was a crack up, basically. Lots of good stories for me to tell later. But eventually I did meet somebody online, and I've been going out with him for 4 years, and I really like that online dating thing. I like the exposure, looking at all kinds of different people and having those little funny conversations that you have. And so any friend or acquaintance that I meet, I really encourage them, if they're ready, I say, you should really try it, because it's kind of fun to get out of where you're so sad or been battered about or something like that, and just do something completely different.
Well, Sarah, congratulations. Wonderful to hear your story, and thank you for sharing it. Sam, I would love to hear, is the idea of being able to reject as empowering, is that common using online dating? Online daters?
It is. And I think, especially with this caller, I think it depends on where you are in your sort of in your relationship arc that you take throughout your life. I think there are times, you know, the nice thing about online dating is you can go and you can sort of have different attitudes on a given day. You can go and say, oh, I want to look for someone who, you know, would be unattainable to me in a normal situation, or I want to search for someone that's in a totally different part of the country and live this sort of dream of being somewhere else. And sometimes you just want to reject people, and, you know, you can be mean, and you know, not like you're not going to be really mean, but you can just like decide, oh, I'm not going to reply to this person, even though, you know, you might have talked to them in a bar, or even though you're not in a position to be rejecting people in your typical day-to-day life. But that can feel great. And you know what, if that makes people feel better, I think it's pretty harmless.
So are the highs and lows the same as in regular dating? You know, a lot of people experience lows and they lose hope they won't find someone. But, you know, it seemed that with online dating, you always have someone new to explore. So, you know, maybe you don't experience the lows, or because of this idea that people use the rejection as empowering, do they actually not get the kind of feedback that would be normal when they are dating someone offline, if you will? I mean, Michael, I don't know if you have an answer to that.
I think that there's a couple of things. One is Americans, compared to people in other countries, are sort of notoriously fickle about relationships. And we have a higher divorce rate than other countries do. And this has been the case for 20 or 30 or 40 years, since before we really had the internet. So there's a fair amount of fickleness, but we also are the most enthusiastic about relationships, despite the high divorce rate. We have a higher sort of belief in relationships than most other countries. So Americans are sort of fools for love. And I think that in some sense, the internet gives them the ability to realize that foolishness and all its wonderfulness. And there's always downsides too. Anything that, you know, if you have to put your heart out there to gain something, then you're always taking the chance that your heart's going to be broken. But I think it works pretty well with the nature of Americans.
Okay. Let me go to Phil. Good evening, Phil.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for calling in to City Visions this evening. Do you have a comment or question?
Yes, I had a comment. I'm a user of OkCupid. I've used it for about a year and a half now, and I've had a really good experience with it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to comment on something that you guys touched on briefly earlier. You were talking about efficiency. And in my mind, efficiency is by far the biggest benefit of the online dating enterprise. I don't use OkCupid because I feel like I'm going to fail if I try to go out and find a date. I use it just because it is massively more efficient than, you know, in both in terms of time and money, than going out and spending $40 at a bar and maybe meeting one person and learning almost nothing about them. You know, in half an hour, I can sit down and learn a huge amount of information about a large number of people, and it costs me nothing, in your case at least. And it's, you know, something I can do just real quickly in an evening at my home.
And Phil, had you explored other online dating sites?
Yes, actually, I tried Match.com before I moved to OkCupid, and eventually left it because of the fact that it cost money, and also the crowd wasn't right for me at the time. I think it's changed quite a bit since then. But I found OkCupid actually to be the best one for me because of the sense of humor that you guys had in creating the site.
Well, thank you for sharing that experience. And are you dating anyone right now?
I am. In fact, I'm on my way to a date with a girl I met on OkCupid.
That's what I love to hear.
Good luck.
Happy Valentine's Day to both of you.
Yeah. In terms of efficiency and specificity, and one of the things that people not infrequently say they want is they want to date somebody who, you know, doesn't do drugs, is not a drinker, If you want to date somebody who doesn't drink much, the bar is not an ideal place to find them. And so, you know, one of the cool things about internet search is you can be specific about what you're looking for, and there it would be hard to find a place, right? They don't have a bar for the people who don't like to drink that much. But they have that online.
Now, speaking of drinking, Sam, one of the things that I read that I was, you have a blog, which seems to kind of look at the data that you collect from the users, and you are able to make observations from that. And you had some recommendations of things you could learn and say to people on their first date, including if you ask them if they'd like the taste of beer. Maybe you could go into this.
Sure. So we, in the process of matching up these, millions of users of the site, we've had a number of successful couples, tens of thousands of successful couples come out of the site. And so what we've done is we've tried to basically figure out what did these people have in common that ultimately sort of could have predicted their success. And in particular, what we did is not just sort of what did they have in common to drive their successful relationship, but what facts about them were correlated with each other. So what we did is in our most recent blog post, which you can see on our site, we basically said, well, what are all the sort of deep questions that you want to know on the first dates, but that you really can't ask? And are there proxies? Are there other questions you can ask that basically get at the same question? So, for example, the question you asked is, sort of the typical guy on a first date is, is my date going to sleep with me on the first date? Am I going to be able to take her home? It turns out that if you ask the question, do you like the taste of beer, that is highly predictive of someone who says yes to that question is very likely to also be willing to have sex with you on the first date. That's the kind of sort of, it's mostly lighthearted. It's the kind of fun, but accurate, kind of fun stuff that we can pull out of all the data that we have. One thing you're wondering on the first date is this relationship going to go anywhere? Do we have long-term potential? You can't ask that on the first date. It feels kind of creepy. But it turns out that if you ask the question, do you like horror movies? If you agree on whether or not you like horror movies, that's a good predictor that this relationship is going somewhere.
As opposed to romantic comedies?
Exactly. Everyone has to like romantic comedies, but not everyone has to like horror movies.
Okay. I think the ladies need to be careful about asking the how beer tastes question from now on.
That's right, exactly.
You've given your secret away. Let me go to another caller. We have Vincent from San Francisco. Hi, Vincent.
Hi. Good evening.
Good evening.
Very interesting discussion, of course. Having been a past user of these sites, and during that period, just maybe 3 or 4 years, was a pretty heavy user. My main sort of observation that I arrived at after a while was the realization that although there's the advantage of discovering a great deal of information ahead of time, it became very difficult, I found, to achieve any real sort of spontaneity during and perhaps after the first meeting, which to me was a great contrast to meeting somebody in person via any of the other traditional means. And after a while, I actually began to try and contrive this sort of spontaneity, which wasn't always easy because, of course, you risk having the other person thinking that you're a little odd. Trying to have unexpected events happen during that first meeting, I felt was important because any relationship, I find, really requires an underlying sort of narrative, a story, to unfold. And if you know exactly how that's going to unfold, at least in the near term, then that's really, it's hard to get excited about.
That's a really interesting point. Michael, have you seen this in your
research? I was going to say, some people want relationship to be a source of stability, and they want predictability. And other people, you see them asking for something like, I want a partner in crime, which is to sort of say, I want somebody who's going to surprise me every day, and maybe every surprise isn't going to always be a good one, but I need sort of excitement and instability in my life. And that's something that some people are looking for in relationships too.
So in terms of getting past the superficial? I mean, do you think that you can, you know, he talked about it, the story unfolding, but do you feel like the information that people are giving up front is really kind of the superficial information that like, kind of lets you then get to, into the meat of the relationship, or do you feel like it's too much too soon?
No, I think for most folks, you know, you want to know some of the key data. And in an earlier generation, maybe like your mom or your best friend was going to be currying this information for you. They would be saying, well, you know, I know she's had this, you know, she used to date this guy and this, you know, she used to do this. And, you know, so you would get some of that information. That information is actually pretty crucial. You want that. You need that. But once you're in the relationship with somebody, you ought to be finding that there are new things to find out. If there isn't anything more about them than you can learn from a 200-word profile, you might be dating somebody boring, and it might be time to change.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions. Tonight we're discussing the art, science, and social implications behind online dating. And joining me are Michael Rosenfeld, Associate Professor of Sociology at Stanford University, and the author most recently of Meeting Online, The Rise of the Internet as a Social Intermediary, and Sam Yagan, co-founder and chief executive officer of OkCupid, a national online dating site. If you'd like to join us, the number is 415-841-4134, or you can join us by emailing us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. I'd like to go to another caller. We have Valerie from Oakland. Good evening, Valerie. Welcome to City Visions.
Hello.
Hi. Did you have a comment or a question for tonight?
I did. Actually, I heard this morning on my way to work that you're going to be having this show, and I was really excited because I get out of class at SF State, and I was going to be in the car for a good amount of time between this hour, and I wanted to call in and say that my wonderful boyfriend Greg and I met on OkCupid about 15 months ago. Woo-hoo!
Sam's racking it up.
we met because it was a mystery match, and we had both written on our profiles that we liked NPR.
Oh, so what's a mystery match?
It was like a little ice cube, and I couldn't see his profile, but he had to message me. I had to message him, and he could look at my profile and decide whether or not it was worth checking out. I don't know really the purpose behind it, but it was kind of like an exciting little twist to the dating site. So that's awesome.
NPR bringing people together. Right. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, thank you. So, Sam, is that a little trick that you learned in terms of, you know, people wanting kind of surprises, kind of what Phil was talking about?
Yeah, it's the problem we had was that because we believe that we do a decent job predicting compatibility, we found that a lot of people, and most of our users actually like the fact that we do such a quantitative analysis of sort of their potential, that people will just come check out their top 20, 30, 40 matches in their area and then, you know, leave and just kind of wait for that to be updated. So we actually started introducing more randomness into our results. When you see a profile, you still will always know what our compatibility index is for you, but we started showing you users in more random ways. And so she's talking about this icebreakers feature that we've had where you basically just sort of start a conversation, and we probably noticed that they both had NPR in their profile. So we would have sort of prompted one of them to say, hey, what would you say to someone who had who liked NPR? Just as a conversation. Think of it as kind of a dating version of Twitter. Like, imagine you could just broadcast a little message to a bunch of compatible people who like NPR, and you could be like, hey, what's your favorite show, or whatever the case may be, and three or four people might get that message, and then, you know, they would get to message you back. And so that's just kind of a way where we can get a conversation started with someone who you don't even get to see, but we've earned your trust to know that it's going to be someone that has something in common with you.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. Well, let me go to, I want to go to Barbara from Oakland. Welcome, Barbara.
Hi.
And your question is about older women dating.
Yes, I just turned 60, and I was just wondering what it's like for older women on dating services, whether, you know, what happens? Is there much activity? What goes on?
Have you tried online dating, or just are curious?
Actually, I have, but earlier, and I did meet somebody, and, you know, it worked out well, but I'm curious about, at this point, it seems, you know, it just seems a little I'm just wondering what it's like out there.
Sam, you've done a lot of research on this, or some research, correct?
Sure. It won't surprise you probably to learn that the over 50 demographic is the fastest growing in the online online dating industry generally, not just OkCupid, but pretty much on every site. It's those people, and we talked about this earlier in the conversation. Sort of as technology is being more accessible to more people, it's those groups that are perhaps later adopters of technology that are later to join the online dating site. So the industry across the board is seeing a lot more activity, and in fact, sites have sprung up. There's a great site called Senior People Meet. That is dedicated entirely to that demographic and is a great success story. OkCupid, is primarily a site for people under 40. That's where the bulk of our usage is. But I just saw an email come through my system today of a thank you note from a 63-year-old woman who just got married. So it definitely happens, and it's sort of the latest trend.
How old was the person she married?
65.
Yeah, it's a sort of fundamental demographic fact that mm-hmm. that there are more single women over 60 because women live longer, and because men over 50 and 60 have a somewhat increased tendency to partner, or at least to try to partner with women who are younger than themselves. So the truth is, women of a certain age need every tool at their disposal.
Okay. Well, we're getting to the top of the hour, so let me give each of you a chance to say some final words. And I kind of am curious, since we are in the Bay Area, if you have specific tips about what you've seen in terms of what works here in the Bay Area or for people that are dating. We have, this would just be one or two sentences because we are getting to the top of the hour. Sam, why don't we start with you?
I think the biggest thing I would say in the Bay Area is number one, it's an early adopter community. So the point of stigma being gone, totally true, more so in the Bay Area than anywhere else. So I think if you haven't done it yet, just try it. Whatever site it is, it's socially acceptable.
Okay. And
I would say to repeat, be good to your friends and don't be afraid to try online.
Okay. Well, great. Well, that's it for City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Michael Rosenfeld, Associate Professor of Sociology at Stanford University, and the author, most recently, of Meeting Online, The Rise of the Internet as a Social Intermediary, and Sam Yagan, co-founder and CEO of OkCupid, a national online dating site. Thank you both so much. This has been a fun hour.
My pleasure. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, check out our website at cityvisionsradio.com. Our engineer this evening was Debbie Kennedy. Thank you so much, Debbie. And tonight's producer was Susie Britton. Thank you, Susie. Great show. City Vision's founder is Rose Levinson. Judith Sanson is the senior producer. And our other producer is Lisa Denenmark. Join City Visions next week when we'll explore food insecurity in San Francisco. This is Lauren Meltzer. Thank you for listening. Good night and have a great week.